It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up? Welcome into the Fade the Chalk podcast brought to you by the FTN Network. I am your host, Debro, joined at the hip, as always, with my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. Fade the Noise is crushing content daily, baby, and it is just going to keep going up. NBA is on the horizon right now. I know my man Adam is going to be crushing content as well on that side. We have FTN Bets with the prop shop out. So whatever you need, whatever you want, FTN has got it. So if you want to look for props, go head over to the prop shop. It is free, 100% free up on the site. This thing is revolutionary. You are looking for a Google search engine for all prop bets across all legal sports books. This is what you need, man. If you go to ftnbets.com/prop-shop and give it a test drive today. On today's show, we are going to be handing out our bold calls for the fantasy football 2020 season. So the fire, the hot takes are coming. It is going to be lit today. Adam, what is up, man?
Chilling. I'm trying to be bold in this podcast. That is the goal. So we'll see if our calls are bolder than people think or not. But yeah, you mentioned NBA starting. I'm excited about that. I'm someone that will do all three sports. So, and we'll be releasing very soon an NBA DFS podcast. Myself and Joe Metz will be tackling that. So that is something to look for as well. And also just really, 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 really had a great time with Marcus Grant on the mock draft episode, which we launched on Wednesday. That's out, so check that out. It's good stuff. It was really fun.
Yeah, man, and I'm excited for this episode because I think we're going to deal some fire here. I'm not usually known for all the bold calls and just the random type of things that I don't even think can actually happen. That's not what we're here for. We're here to give you actual takes that we think, like, if you were to squint your eyes, you could possibly see happen if all of the stars align. So, Adam, kick us off here. What is the first bold take that you have that is going to melt people's faces off?
I don't know if this is going to melt people's faces off, but it might make them sweat, I guess. I'm gonna go to Kansas City, where... Let's go to Mecole Hardman. I think Mecole Hardman is going to finish as a top 25 fantasy receiver this year. He's being drafted like outside the top 40 at the position. Obviously, his 2019 season was, you know, it was fantastic in the limited work that he got. But because, you know, they had Sammy Watkins there for a big chunk of the year, Tyreek Hill when he was healthy, Travis Kelce, like, they just had so many guys. DeMarcus Robinson was playing over Mecole Hardman a lot. I think that changes this year, though. For starters, I mean, Mecole Hardman is just a more talented, more dynamic, more explosive player. We've already seen and heard the Chiefs coaching staff talk about how they may limit or not even use Mecole Hardman as a punt returner or as a primary returner as much this year, just because they value him so much. They don't want to lose him. And I think that just tells us that he's going to be more involved offensively than his 26 catches in 2019. Just ridiculous. The fact that he had all those yards on those catches, you know, 20 yards per reception, nearly 600 receiving yards. Sammy Watkins did, you know, return, which definitely hurts his upside a little bit. But, like, would anybody be surprised? I know Watkins had a really good postseason stretch, but would anybody be surprised if Mecole Hardman kind of leapfrogged him as well? He's such a good fit for this offense with Patrick Mahomes and company. I don't project injuries. I don't think anybody does or anybody should. But we did see the beginning of the year, because Tyreek Hill had that injury the beginning of the season, missed like two of the first 4 weeks of the year or whatever, and that's why Watkins had that huge week one game. But during that stretch in weeks 2 to 5 with Tyreek Hill hurt, Hardman played 65% of the snaps. He was only at 44% over the course of the entire season. So, like, if somebody misses time, or if he just, you know, leapfrogs DeMarcus Robinson, he could be like a 60% snap guy. And there's just so much upside. I mean, 6.2 air yards per target, 7 yards after the catch per reception. Just a monster player with so much upside. And again, in the 9th or 10th round, like, he's usually a 10th round pick, but I have no problems taking him in the 9th round, because he could be a league winner. And God forbid, if anything happens to Tyreek Hill, he could be even higher than top 25.
Well, I like the call, too, because all he needs is more opportunity. I mean, last year, he was so crazy efficient with the targets that he got that you're just screaming the entire season, give this man more work. And the part that I love about all of this is that this doesn't have to come at the expense of Sammy Watkins. Like, Sammy ran out of the slot for a lot of last season. He's got a what, hop DeMarcus Robinson?
That's what I think people are, like, that's what I think people are, like, people saw, because there was that huge question about Watkins' future at the end of the year. Like, he was hinting towards maybe taking a year off from football, and then they restructured his contract, so he's going to be back. And then he had, like, before that, he had that big postseason stretch. He had 14 catches for nearly 300 yards and a touchdown during their three-game postseason run. So that didn't help. But, like you said, Sammy Watkins can be on the field a ton, as much as usually is in this offense. And it still doesn't mean Mecole Hardman can't break out in year two, because I think he can and should pass DeMarcus Robinson. And the fact that they're already talking about taking him, potentially limiting his role or decreasing his role as their primary returner, that just tells me he's playing on offense a lot more, which, I mean, one of those guys has to come off the field unless they're going to run, you know, they could run four wide at times, but just, you know, you don't see teams do it very often. So I think, can you imagine what his ADP would be if Watkins didn't return? Like, if he was taking the year off? Mm-hmm. I mean, my goodness. But
he'd be a top 36 wide receiver probably, easily.
I don't think it'd be probably any about it, because he'd probably be like a... He'd probably be picked where, like, Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller and those guys are going. But he has just as much upside if things go right for him, and they don't have to go that right. He doesn't need Tyreek Hill and Watkins to get hurt. And he's going to have games regardless, because he's that good. Mahomes is that good. And there's just so many like, you have to worry about Kelce. You have to worry about Hill. So I'm trying to draft Mecole Hardman in pretty much every draft possible, especially the ones where I go really running back heavy to start.
Well, you've talked about the guy that you think is going to break out in his second year. And so that kind of leads me into my guy. And people are probably going to roll their eyes at this, because I get it's bold. But that is what we are here to talk about today. So the second-year guy that I've got to discuss here is Josh Oliver. I know that I've been on Twitter proclaiming my love for Josh Oliver, and I'm not going to stop now. I think Josh Oliver could be this year's Darren Waller, and I don't think it's that insane. And I know people are probably rolling their eyes. They're probably about to turn the podcast off, but bear with me for a second. Listen to me. Just turn the volume up and enjoy this. Jay Gruden loves featuring uber athletic tight ends. That is exactly what you're looking for when you stare at Josh Oliver. You look at what Jay Gruden has done, even going all the way back to Cincinnati. Jermaine Gresham got an average 17.6 target share in his first 2 years under Gruden. He finishes the tight end 13 and 11 in fantasy points per game. You fast forward that to whenever we saw Jordan Reed, or any semblance of a healthy Jordan Reed. And if you look at athletic measurables, is as athletic as Jordan Reed. Like, I know that sounds crazy, but it's absolutely true. Jordan Reed in the Washington offense was commanding between a 17 and 24% target share based off of the year. He was the tight end one in back-to-back seasons and the tight end eight in fantasy points per game. As much as I love DJ Chark, this passing game is wide open. He's got to, what, bypass D.D. Westbrook, who's never really been a thing. Chris Conley, who's on his second team, and as much as I like his season last year, is not hard to hop, okay? Tyler Eifert is there. That is definitively true, but Tyler Eifert is a bit player. He is a part-time player that is probably going to command snaps whenever they get in close. Last year, even in Josh Oliver playing only three games, he had half as many games as Tyler Eifert did in running 20 more or more routes. And Oliver only played three games! Like, this is a team that wants to get this guy involved. The offensive system is in place, or will be for this year. Jacksonville did not want to rush him back, and a guy that I think that could absolutely explode, much like we saw DJ Chark do last year. Oliver has the talent. The system is there. He has the rapport because him and Minshew were working on the backfields last year as far as backup players, practice squad reps, all of these things can align for Josh Oliver this year. And I know people want to roll their eyes at me, but he is free. If you're going to punt tight end, he is one of the shots you take, especially in redraft and in best ball. I want all the Josh Oliver, because the fact of it is, if I'm wrong, you cut him.
Yeah, who cares?
Nothing.
We did the tight end podcast. We did the tight end podcast with Justin Boone, and we named like 25 dudes that we'd be comfortable with at some point as our tight end next season. So like, if Oliver doesn't hit, like you said, you cut him and you go get, I don't know, Dan Arnold, maybe, like whoever. But there's going to be so many guys.
The other side of this, if I'm right, you have Josh Oliver coming out of nowhere, ransacking people, and you're laughing in the face of your entire league and enjoying the hell out of it all year.
When you introed the Josh Oliver take, you said that people might be rolling their eyes and turning it off, but you can't do that because we're talking about him being this year's Darren Waller. Darren Waller wasn't drafted last year in fantasy league for the most part. Neither is Josh Oliver for the most part. So, like, we're not saying that Josh Oliver is going to be Travis Kelce, this perennial tight end that's done it for years. You're saying he could be this year's out of nowhere, you know, breakout fantasy tight end, which exactly what Darren Waller was. Wasn't drafted in many leagues, if any, came out. And most of that had to do with the fact the combination of super athletic player, a ton of targets available. Same situation here. I mean, Oakland probably had, you know, a better path from last year because they didn't have an alpha. They had Tyrell Williams, plus Tyrell Williams got hurt, and Renfrow got hurt. But, I mean, outside of DJ Chark, you're right. I mean, there's, like, I honestly think, and this is going to be a good segue for my bold call, but I think because I love Gardner Minshew so much this year, that one of, you know, Josh Oliver or Laviska Shenault are going to have a really good rookie year. And it could easily be Oliver. And, by the way, looking at his player profiler page, his best comparable is Hayden Hurst, so I'm on board automatically.
But yeah, staying in Jacksonville, what do you see for Mustache Mania this year?
I honestly do believe, and we've talked about Minshew a lot, I think he's going to be a top 10 quarterback this year. I really, really do. So we've talked, I know you've been doing the coaching breakdowns over at FTN Fantasy, which have been really good. You've done Jacksonville. You've highlighted how these Jay Gruden offenses tend to be pretty pass-heavy. I think the combination of Jay Gruden being there and this Jacksonville team, yes, via the draft, they did add some players. Kalavon Chaisson and C.J. Henderson. But you look at their last 2 years, they've lost a lot of guys. I mean, Jalen Ramsey, A.J. Bouye, Calais Campbell. Like, they're just losing dudes every year now. I think this could be one of the five. Like, I gave the comp last time we talked about Minshew. That Blake Bortles season, I think it was 2015, where he just threw so many passes and ran a good amount too and kind of just walked into a top five fantasy season. I don't know if Minshew has that because he doesn't have an Allen Robinson. Yes, DJ Chark is really good, but I think that kind of usage where he's going to throw maybe 600 times and run for, you know, 60, 70 more times, I think that's easily in the range of outcomes. Minshew led all quarterbacks last year with 49 scrambles, so that's clearly a part of his game. He was, you know, not terrible as a passer. He wasn't, like, a top-tier passer or anything like that, but he wasn't terrible. You add Laviska Shenault, who's going to give him easy receptions and plays after the catch. And if they do get anything out of Josh Oliver, or if he is this year's Darren Waller, then that's even better odds for him to do this. And you had Chris Thompson, who Fournette was really involved as a pass catcher last year, but it doesn't mean he was necessarily, you know, efficient or really good in that role. And during the first 9 weeks of last season, Minshew was 10th among quarterbacks in fantasy points. You know, that's a pretty big sample. And his situation for fantasy has gotten better. Plus, he was a sixth-round pick last year. Like, thrust onto the scene after Nick Foles broke his collarbone in week one. He's going to be more prepared this year. I know people are talking about the whole coronavirus offseason with less time to, like, that I think that's starting to be, like, the most, like, I understand it's a legitimate concern, but, like, we're acting like people in this league are not going to be prepared. Like, they're still going to be prepared. Like, they're not just, okay, guys, training camp's here, we're going to just watch film, and then when week one starts, you're on the field for the first time. Like, I understand it's a concern, but I'm not changing my draft strategy because of it. So, yeah, I'm all in on Jacksonville, which is terrifying, other than Fournette. Just no thanks.
I'm with you. I think that if you go read the Jacksonville breakdown over at FTNFantasy.com, I went through everything, Pays personnel, what do I see for this backfield. I think that the targets are going to be redirected. I think that they're going to go through all the pass catchers, not name Leonard Fournette this year. So I'm with you, man. Moving out of Jacksonville and over to one of my love list players, you've heard me talk about him religiously, and we are not going to go through a bold calls episode without me discussing Cam Akers. I think that he could be a top 10 fantasy running back this year, and that it, you can believe whatever you want to about McVay coach speak and about this being a four-man committee. Invest in your Malcolm Brown and your Daryl Henderson to your own detriment. I am not going to do that. Right now, Akers is going outside of the top 25 RBs in every format, and I want all the Cam Akers. For what everybody says about this offense, they were still a top 10 offense. Top 5 in red zone attempts per game. The offensive line has been much maligned, but there are still pieces here that can rebound and be good. For as much as people talk about how old Whitworth is, he was still a top 10 pass-blocking offensive lineman last year. He fell off in the run game, but if that is an outlier, an apparition, thing that is not going to happen this season, this line can definitively bounce back, and they don't have to be top shelf for Akers to hit his ceiling. McVay has loved using running backs and running the ball when they get in close. That has absolutely been true, both with the Rams and with Washington. If you look at last year, it was an outlier as far as target shares to the running backs. That's going to bounce back. Even if you want to play the narrative the line is bad, Akers can eat in the passing game as well. We've seen Todd Gurley do it in this offense. And no, I'm not saying that Akers is Todd Gurley. What I'm saying, if you're trying to figure out how this offense runs, when it's been the most effective, that's utilizing running backs in the passing game. That wasn't last year. So as much as Tyler Higbee truthers want to come up at my mentions or want to talk about how it's going to be 12 personnel and all this type of stuff, Akers is going to be amazing this year. So give me all the Cam Akers because I want it. I will reach for him. I do not care about
him. You have reached for him.
I don't care. ADP is a false construct. If you're going to follow ADP at times, especially when you know you have sharp people in the room drafting with you, you are probably going to miss out on all your players. And here's the thing. If you do the homework, which right now, if you're listening to this podcast, you care about fantasy football. You're willing to put in the time. You are a degen just like us. If that is the case, if you are right about the players that you like, why do you want to miss out on them? Because if you're right, you're going to the top. You're going to win the league because you got the guys that you like, if you're right. So why not get the guys that you want?
Yeah, and with Akers real quick, I think the only way that can happen, and you kind of alluded to it, he has to be the goal line back, which I like Akers a lot as a player,
who's
gonna
too. He's going to be the guy Malcolm Brown?
Yeah, like, there was those game. Remember, there was that stretch last year where Malcolm Brown was getting goal line work over Gurley, and, like, everybody was saying, oh, Gurley lost his role, but, like, we have to be careful when we're talking about goal line carries because, like, there's certain goal line carries that they obviously all mean something, but if you, like, certain goal line carries just come because teams are in the two-minute drill and they're not, you know, changing formations in the hurry-up. They're not subbing guys in and out, so they're just, you know, quickly running plays. I think Malcolm Brown got a fair share of those, and obviously Gurley, the huge elephant in the room. He had the knee issues last year, so they were going to be cautious with him regardless. They're not going to be cautious with Cam Akers. If Cam Akers is a top 10 running back, D-Bro, you're probably going to win a fair share of your leagues this year. I'm going to stick with running back as well. I'm going to Aaron Jones, and I'm going on the opposite end of the spectrum. I am not really in on Aaron Jones at all this year. We talked about it a little bit. My bold call, he's going to finish. Again, my bold call, I don't have it ranked this way, I'm not projecting it, but my bold call is Aaron Jones finishes outside the top 20 running backs. It's a little bit scary, but, I mean, if you look at it, Aaron Jones was fantastic last year, and he's probably one of the, you know, 10 best, you know, most talented running backs in the league, but that only matters to a certain extent, and right now, Green Bay, the way they're constructing their team, I don't know if that matters that much. I know him and Jamal Adams are both free agents next season. They drafted A.J. Dillon in the second round. and he had all his touchdowns last year. Like, everybody, that's the first thing you think of with Aaron Jones is his touchdowns are coming down. That's a concern, too. But also, like, he could be close to a zero in the passing game this year. Like, 45% of his catches last year came with Davante Adams out of the lineup. When he was healthy, Davante Adams, Jones averaged 2.2 catches per game. Not to mention, Jamal Adams missed a handful of time, too. And Jamal Adams, for 2 years now, has been the preferred pass-catching back. Like, people love Aaron Jones, but I've said it before. Jamal Williams is a better pass-catching back than Aaron Jones. He's not as talented as a player, but he's a better pass-catching back, and we know he's a better blocking back. Jones has been improved in the past, but Jamal Williams is still the preferred guy. Plus, what happens if A.J. Dillon steals goal line work? Aaron Jones has given them no reason to do that, but you don't draft a guy in the second round to prepare for two running backs being free agents. You don't prepare for running back free agents, especially, you know, when there's two of them. It just doesn't happen. So that tells me A.J. Dillon is going to have a role in this offense. So if his touchdowns come way down, like, they're coming down regardless, but if they come way down, like, Aaron Jones could be way more touchdown dependent than we think.
Yeah, I'm not in on Aaron Jones this year. I even where he's going at in drafts, I absolutely can see that, because really, you're talking about it, Adam. Like, both of the giant things that we look for in running backs, pass game involvement, touchdown equity, he's got guys that are flanking either side of him that can take both of those out of his back pocket. And I understand he's super efficient. I will not question Aaron Jones' talent. That is not what we're talking about here. Because, yes, is he talented? Oh, easily. Is he the most talented running back in that backfield? Yeah. It's not even close. And I don't care about A.J. Dillon's combine metrics. I understand it. If you watch the guy play football, none of that holds true. He is not near as agile as his combine metrics would lead you to believe. So I love Aaron Jones the player, but no, I'm with you on this one. Going into last year's breakout guys and Loveless guys, I'm going to double down, man. I am all in on DJ Moore. I've been on Twitter. I've talked about it. It is DJ Moore no matter what season. Because DJ Moore, I'm going to throw it out there. He could finish as the wide receiver one. Numero uno. Top of the mountain. The head honcho. Put the king's crown on his head. He can do it this year. If you look at what DJ Moore did last year, he was 7th in receiving yards per game. I know the Panthers threw the ball a ton last year. They were 2nd in passing attempts in the league. What's changed? What's changed at all? They're going to do that again this year. With Teddy in town, he's going to get better quarterback play. They have a better, if not comparable, offensive coordinator, because I like Scott Turner a lot more than most. But Joe Brady is a boss. We saw last year he coached up an elite, a legendary passing game at LSU. He could do that in the NFL. He's been tutored by the best in New Orleans. And if you look at DJ Moore, weeks 1 through 15, he was out week 17. He only played 9% of the snaps in week 16. Over that stretch, he was the wide receiver 12 in fantasy points per game, while scoring 4 touchdowns. Let that sink in for a second. 4 touchdowns in 15 games. If we think that this offense is going to run fast, they're going to run just as many plays and pass a ton, because their defense is a dumpster fire. I love DJ Moore this year. I think the touchdowns go up. I think that he's going to see a bump in target share. I think that he is the alpha, the unquestioned alpha in Carolina. I want all the DJ Moore, and I'm not going to be surprised when he ends the year as the number one wide receiver and he has 100 receptions.
You must not like him enough, because you didn't draft him in the mock draft, just saying. Somebody else did.
I got sniped, man.
That's why that episode was so good. You got sniped to start the draft. Like, legitimately sniped, because it was right before your pick. I took Marlon Mack right before Marcus. Marcus took Marvin Jones right before me. Robert Woods got picked before me, and then I was going to pick Robert Woods before Marcus. Like, it was so good. It was great. But that Panthers defense, unless Brian Burns, Derek Brown, and Gross Matos, who the latter two of their draft picks from this past draft are, like, incredible. I think Brian Burns is really good. They're going to be so bad. Their secondary is awful. Dante Jackson, really, really, really fast player, solid corner. But then it's Eli Apple, Corn Elder, Jeremy Chinn, and Trey Boston. Those are their starting pieces, their secondary. It should be bad. And Christian McCaffrey is going to be incredible. But again, a new regime, a new coaching staff, what if they bump him down from like 95% snap share to like 90%? You know, it's just another guy that if he's playing a few less snaps per game, just more could be more targets that quietly add up. So I could see it. I really could. The quarterback play, for some reason, people aren't talking about enough. It's going to be incredibly better with Teddy Bridgewater, just vastly better. There was that report that came out today that Curtis Samuel is going to be used like way more and way like how he was used in college. So we'll see if myself included falls for the Curtis Samuel trap again this offseason.
I like Curtis Samuel, and the thing about him is that he's still not the alpha. Like, Curtis Samuel is going to dent more of the other players that people love so much, like Robbie Anderson, Ian Thomas, players like that. I think that DJ Moore and CMC are the unquestioned two main targets in this offense, and everybody else is just going to fight for scraps. We've got to head back to L.A. because I've got to get... You have got a fire take on the outline right here, Adam. I got to get your take about this dude over in L.A. right now, man.
So, I'm not going to lie. I literally thought of this as we were preparing for the show. Like, this wasn't something I had, like, you know, thought of over the last months. I love this player. That's not new to anybody. But my bold take is Robert Woods outscores both Tampa Bay wide receivers, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, in fantasy this year. I moved him up to my wide receiver 12 today. I could see it. I think Robert Woods has a legitimate chance to be one of the five or six maybe players in the league to catch 100 balls. Especially, you know, the whole 12 personnel thing with the Rams is still up in the air. But, you know, that would benefit him rather than Cooper Kupp. I think he's just going to be a guy that runs as many routes as any player in the NFL this year. I believe he was among the league leaders last year, too. Brandon Cooks is gone. I know maybe their tight ends as a whole will kind of, you know, make up for his absence in terms of targets. But I just think this is a really good player who is in an offense that is going to be a little bit more pass-heavy than they've been. And his touchdowns are coming up. He's too talented to only score two touchdowns. He'll give you 150 rushing yards and maybe a touchdown or two on the ground. He scored a rushing touchdown last year. I think 130 targets are a lock for him. I think he's going to catch 100 balls. I've already tweeted that out. I think he's going to catch 100 balls this year. Whereas Godwin and Mike Evans probably aren't. Like, they'll both catch enough to where neither can get there. The big question is going to be the touchdowns. Because, you know, projecting right now, most people would project the Tampa Bay guys to have more touchdowns. But Robert Woods doesn't have, like Cooper Kupp is the red zone guy, which is, you know, why Robert Woods doesn't score a lot of touchdowns. But I also think he's just too good and too good of a system and opportunity to only be scoring three touchdowns. So if he can get the six, I think he can outscore both these guys, because I think he's going to be just one of the more involved receivers in fantasy this season.
Like, everybody talks about whether it's 11 or whether it's 12 personnel. Does nobody realize that, like, that doesn't matter about with Robert Woods? He plays on the outside.
Yeah.
Like, regardless of whatever side of the coin or whatever side of the aisle you sit on, whether it's going to be 11 or whether it's going to be 12, Robert Woods is sitting on both sides? Like, he's not coming off the field. It doesn't matter how many targets they have on the field.
He's going to be either. Yeah, he's going to be among the league leaders at receiver and snaps and routes. He's not coming off the field. 10 games with at least 9 targets last year. He had like 5 with double-digit targets. I know Cooper Kupp missed some time, but I just think if he can get the 5 or 6 touchdowns, he has a good shot to outscore both those guys. And obviously this is not a knock on those guys. They're great. This is just more of a, I'm super high on Robert Woods, and, you know, we're getting bold here. So being drafted well after both, I think my bold call is he outscores both of them.
Well, so before I give my next take, let's just get it out. Let's get it out of here. Give a moment of silence for all of the expiring, the past their prime Will Fuller injury jokes. Can we just give a moment of silence for those? Okay, now they're all dead. I love Will Fuller, and I think he's going to be a top 15 wide receiver this year. And yes, like I discussed, I understand he's had injuries. That's not what this is about. If he stays healthy, he is going to ball out. Houston is set up to chuck the ball deep like crazy this year. We saw last year under the first year under Tim Kelly, they bumped up the deep balls per game from 3.9 to 5.4. There is no reason that Deshaun Watson is going to stop doing that this year. Will Fuller only has to stay healthy. Targets are going to be there aplenty. We know that Hopkins has gone to Arizona. But if you look back over Will Fuller from 2017 to 2019, over 22 regular season game sample, he has been awesome. On average, over 22 games, 14.7 PPR points per game. He's at 10 receiving touchdowns, and this is pacing this out for 16 games. It put him at 100 targets and over almost 1,100 yards. You look at that point total, that would put him as the wide receiver 13, 15, 10, and 13 over the last 4 years in total points. All we need is health, and I know it's a big if, but this is almost, what can we say, the healthiest offseason that Will Fuller's had in a very long time. He's coming off a surgery, I understand that, but it was a relatively minor one. He is second year off of the ACL. Players that come back in their first year of ACLs after repairs do deal with some type of soft tissue, possibly lagging injuries. And we've seen some of them fade down the stretches in their first year back. If Will Fuller has been training this entire offseason, if he is able to stay healthy, the ceiling is so stinking high for him. There's no way I can get away with him. Like, I want to draft Will Fuller everywhere because this is can easily be a reality, and you don't have to sit here and look really hard to understand how it can happen. I know you've been in on the Texans. Do you think this is possible for Will Fuller, or do you think, like, this is the 0.5% outcome possibility?
Depends. It depends on if you think a 0.5% probability outcome is him staying healthy, because if you think it's... if you think that's actually it, then obviously he's not going to hit this mark. But if by whatever reason this guy can play not even 16 games, if he can play 13 or 14 games, this is very possible because of how good he's been with Deshaun Watson and how good Watson's been when he's been able to throw the deep ball. The only reason I don't like this is because this is going to be interesting. Maybe we should make some friendly wagers here, because I'm team Brandon Cooks this year, not anti-team Will Fuller. I just prefer Cooks. They both have serious risks, but they both have immense upside. But yeah, I mean, Will Fuller, if he can play the majority of the season, I don't think it's, you know, egregious to think he can be a top 12 guy, given the fact that I think this offense is going to pass more this year. Their defense in the secondary has some question marks still. And, I mean, Will Fuller has been – he's got as much upside as anybody, so.
So, all right, let's put some money down on it then, okay? What do you say? Take the injuries off the table here. Fantasy points per game? PPR? Who scores more, Brandon Cooks or Will Fuller? I take the Fuller side.
Points per game – I still think Fuller might be better in points per game, but I'll do it for fun. I'll take Cooks.
Okay. All right. Let's do it. Let's track it. We'll keep up with it. Who is your next call here?
Well, for my second quarterback one of the episode, I'm going to L.A. Tyrod Taylor. Everybody wants to talk about how the Chargers are going to go to Justin Herbert at some point this year, and he's going to be the guy. But why? Like, why is that a foregone conclusion when... okay, everybody's talking about this offseason, it's going to be tough for rookies, but all of a sudden, Justin Herbert's going to come in and take Tyrod Taylor's job. Not so sure about that. Two, if they can somehow, for once, stay relatively healthy, this team has enough talent to compete enough to keep Tyrod in the starting lineup. Joey Bosa on defense. Their secondary is loaded with Desmond King, Chris Harris, and Casey Hayward. They're a really, really, really complete team that should have enough talent to, at worst, make this team like a 9-7 team. And if they win 9 games, Tyrod Taylor's not coming off the field. So, having said that, this is going to be a run-heavy team with Anthony Lynn there and Tyrod at quarterback, but Tyrod has a ton of familiarity with Anthony Lynn. I think, assuming they're as good as I think they're going to be or good enough, Tyrod will start every game this year and be a top 10 quarterback in fantasy. That is my final bold call. Tyrod, this is the best offense he's ever been in. We know he was more than fantasy relevant during his time with the Buffalo Bills. He was, in his 3 seasons with Buffalo, quarterback 16, quarterback 7, and quarterback 16. But that was also in a situation where a top 3 run-heavy team. I don't think the Chargers are going to be that run-heavy. Buffalo was like, it was Buffalo. They were always top 3 in run rate. He had Sammy Watkins, his really good year in Buffalo, his only really good year. That was 1 year. But then it was Kelvin Benjamin for half a season, which was his best receiver. Charles Clay was his number one receiver for a lot of those games. LeSean McCoy was his number one receiver for a lot of those games. They had Zay Jones and Andre Holmes. It was bad. Now you have Tyrod, who I still think is a more than capable quarterback. He's going to run. We know that. He averaged 94.3 rushing attempts and 525 rushing yards during his three seasons with the Bills. Anthony Lynn knows Tyrod. He's not gonna tell Tyrod not to run. It's going to be really interesting with the Chargers. This is the first time they've had a mobile quarterback in forever. And the weapons, no matter what, are just light years better. Keenan Allen, clearly the best receiver he's ever played with. Austin Eckler, you know, one of the best pass-catching running backs in the NFL. Mike Williams gives him that deep target and that big-body guy that he can, because Tyrod will take deep shots, and he's been a pretty efficient deep ball passer. Hunter Henry's a really good tight end. I think Tyrod has the upside and potential to be a really good fantasy quarterback. Nobody's really talking about it because they all expect Justin Herbert to come in. I don't think it's happening, especially because Anthony Lynn's a head coach.
Well, with the Konami code, like the ability for him to get the rushing points, I think it's absolutely within the range of outcomes, because the fact of it is he only has to be just serviceable as far as a passer, because the all of those skill players you just named off, they're all great yards after the catch. They're all playmakers. It's not like he's surrounded by team catch and fall down. You know, it's not like he has nothing but like unathletic players that really are not going to make plays or do anything after he's able to get the ball to them accurately. So he's going to do two things well to sit here and hit his ceiling. That's still run, which I understand he's getting up in years and stuff like that, but that doesn't mean that he can't.
Yeah, and he hasn't played since that first couple two games in Cleveland. Yeah, he hasn't played, so it's not like he's, you know, beat up or anything. And the other thing with Tyrod, I've clearly watched him a lot with the Bills. For as much as I love him, he will hold on to the ball and will not force throws. But Austin Eckler, the way they use him and how shifty he is, he gets open and creates a ton of separation. We know Keenan Allen is probably the best route runner and separator in the NFL. Like, those are two guys that can really help him. I mean, he had Kelvin Benjamin's like the worst separator in the league. That was his number one receiver. So he should be way more efficient and way more consistent as a passer with these weapons. And then, you know, if he does end up forcing some more throws, he has some contested catch guys like Mike Williams and Hunter Henry. So I think people are sleeping on Tyrod in general. Like, I think he's undervalued. Just, you know, I think top 15 is legitimately possible. But bold call, in this offense with these weapons, I think top 10 is a legit thing that could happen, because he was quarterback 7 in this Bills offense. That's just way worse, slower, and more run heavy, and with worse weapons.
Well, if people are still asleep, I'm going to absolutely scream at them to wake up right now, because y'all are still sleeping, man. Y'all are still absolutely asleep at the wheel, because Irv Smith, there is no way he needs to be tight end 22 right now. Not when I think it's in his wheelhouse to possibly be a top 10 tight end this year. And we've gotten on here, and I just got to cement this fully. We've gotten on here, talked about tight ends before. I have spit my Irv Smith love take before, and I'm not going to shy away from it now. Not when we have bold calls to proclaim. It's all the Irv Smith, baby. And a lot of this, yes, I think that he could be this year's Dallas Goedert. You saw Dallas Goedert ball out last year. Billy used a ton of 12 personnel. Do you want to know who was second in 12 personnel usage last year? It was Minnesota. That's not going away with losing Stephon Diggs. Dallas Goedert was the tight end 10. The Vikings use their tight ends not only just in between the 20s, but in the red zone. 33% target share for the position. You have Irv Smith, who's dominating the slot reps. So weeks 9 through 16, 63% in the slot. He's athletic. He's running in the slot. Who is going to catch passes behind Adam Thielen this year? I don't know who it's going to be. I'm going to put my money down on the guy that, when we saw him on the field last year, already has a rapport with Kirk Cousins. I'm putting my money with the guy that has all of those things in his back pocket, and he walks into yet another year of NFL seasoning. Irv Smith is going to explode this year, and I think it's absolutely not crazy to call him a tight end 1, much less the fact that he can reach a top 10 status, even if Kyle Rudolph is able to stay healthy this year. I think that's the caveat that I want to add on top of this beautiful, delicious Irv Smith cake that I'm baking here.
You have probably talked me, like, the way you've made me change my view on Irv Smith has been, like, a top, one of the most, somebody's made me change my mind on a player in fantasy. Like, I'm in, man. I'm 100% in. And you mentioned that 9-16 stretch with Irv Smith. That was, a lot of that was with Adam Thielen hurt. And it was, you know, I mentioned that because, you know, they had Diggs and nobody else. Justin Jefferson should be a good player, but, you know, who's to say he's going to come out right away? Maybe Irv Smith continues to play in the slot to start the season, because Adam Thielen's going to be, in my guess, like a 40% slot guy. I wouldn't expect him to be anything higher than that, maybe 45%. Mm-hmm. And
agreed.
The Vikings defense is going to take a step back this year. Their secondary was always already bad. They lost guys. Pierce just, you know, came out yesterday and said he's opting out of the season. That was their big free agent splash in the middle of that defensive line. Like, I think this defense could be, from where heading into last year, they were probably a consensus top 10 unit. I could see them being like 18, 19, and that could be enough to where Kirk Cousins has to throw the ball more. And again, outside of Adam Thielen, who's, in my opinion, Adam Thielen's getting 150 targets, but the rest are up for grabs for sure.
Well, and the other thing that needs to get thrown out there, you're talking about the defense. Last year, if we do believe that Gary Kubiak, who is controlling this offense this year, that he had a lot to say in what the offensive design looked like and how they ran and stuff, if that defense is bad, Minnesota was top 10 in passing rate when they were in negative game scripts. If they find themselves in any more of those this year, the passing attempts are going to go up for Kirk Cousins, much as the target tree is narrow.
And if that does happen, Thielen's going to be a top 5 receiver.
But yeah, so we got on here, we spit the fire for this episode, we got all of our, this is our top 10 bold calls for the year, so we're going to keep track of these, keep this outline, and we're going to tell you absolute transparency of where we ended up at the end of the year. We will be back for one more episode this week, and again next week, rocking 3 episodes per week. Next episode, we're going to have Brandon Thorne from Establish the Run on the pod to talk offensive lines. So for Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.